The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Jacques and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the first chapter of Proverbs, we hear, "Let the wise also hear and gain in learning, and the discerning acquire skill. Bless us, O Lord, with your presence, and guide our hearts and minds with the discerning for the calling that you have given each of us. May you guide us and help us to do and say that which reflects your presence in our lives and in our actions, our love for you and your people. In your holy name we pray. Amen."
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Searpoy, Crawford, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Leibola, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schaff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
A quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 14th day, Monday, January 29, 2018. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment.
President McCullough, what purpose you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
The Senator from Cole has moved that the further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you're recognized. Closed. Those opinion that motion shall prevail say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guests. Senator
President
Cole, purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. It's my honor today, Mr. President, to introduce to the body our doctor of the day. On my left and your right, it's my pleasure to introduce Joni Lathan, Dr. Joni Lathan. Joni received her bachelor's and master's degree from the University of Missouri and her doctor of medicine from Michigan State University. She's a second-year resident in pediatrics. Thank you. Your mother didn't type this very well. At Truman Medical Center, Children's Mercy, and St. Luke's Hospitals in Kansas City. She is here today as a resident doctor of the day. She is the daughter of our Carolyn, St. Carolyn Lathan, and she has been inspiring to the next group that I'm going to introduce as a former graduate of Helias High School. Please welcome
the
doctor.
Please welcome the guest from the Senator Cole and the doctor of the day.
Mr. President,
Cole.
I have another group, Mr. President, to
please
introduce.
Proceed.
On my right, to your left, Mr. President, we have the Helias Catholic High School state championship, Mr. President, volleyball team. They won the 2017 Class 3 state volleyball championship. From the team here with us today are Aaron Wyrick, Brandy Bearhorst, Kaylee Henson, Hannah Barshell, Crystal Bronner, Megan Engelbrecht, Ryan Bruns, who is the captain, Ellie Rockers, Riley Bernsketter, Grace Millard, Kelsey Brewster, Olivia Farrell, Jada Oldham, Corey Otto, Grace Stieferman, and Katie Wilson. They're here with kind of a legendary coach of Central Missouri for volleyball who's been at it a long, long time, Dave Harris. These students and their coaches are obviously dedicated and disciplined to be super competitive. I ask that those with them, I know some of their parents are with them, please stand and at the Missouri Senate make these state champions welcome.
Let's please welcome the guests from Cole and let's congratulate the state champions of volleyball. Introduction of guest. Sarah, on the 24th, I purpose you rise.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on your right and my left over here, we have some dedicated public servants who work on behalf of our veterans in the state of Missouri. And they are from the senator from Johnson's district, but I've met with them and spoken with them and spent some time with them, and I'm proud to introduce them. First, from the Warrensburg Veterans Home, the administrator there, Eric Ensley. With Eric is the assistant administrator, Jamie McCannon. And also here today with them is Teresa Shane, who is with VFW Post 2513. If you would all please join me in making these people who serve our veterans so well feel welcome.
Let's please welcome the guests from the 24th and the men and women that do serve our veterans to the Missouri Senate. Introduction of guest. Introduction of guest. Hearing none. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Hearing none. Resolutions. Resolutions. Hearing none. Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Hearing none. Introduction of bills. Senator from St. Francis, what purpose do you rise?
Have a bill.
Please send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 972, introduced by Senator Romine, an act relating to energy.
Senator from St. Francis, you care to explain the bill?
Mr. President, I do. Thank you very much. As many of my colleagues know, that since my first time being in the Senate, I've been involved with the utility debate from the
Senate will come to order for the senator to explain the bill. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. As I was saying, since day one being involved in Senate, I've been involved in the utility discussion that's gone on for 6 years in a heavy way. We've worked very hard since the beginning of time to come to consensus on dealing with the issue. My first year in, I was nominated to be the guy, but when we came up third read on Senate Bill 297, the water bill, I had one last argument to make that day on the floor. When the vote was taken, that bill was defeated. I was even chastised by leadership. We don't lose a bill on third read. But I think if we study a bill well enough and we're educated well enough and we know the value of the bill, we're going to make an honest decision. Now, we have filibustered the bills over the last several years because we never could get to a consensus that created a balance between the consumers and the utility companies. This year, I'm introducing a bill called Missouri Energy Freedom Act that has taken the conversations we've had over the last several months, actually the last several years, and tried to come up with a package that will allow the utilities to go forward but also protect the consumers. And I hope my colleagues will take time to read this bill. We've had discussions. I've given these 11 bullet points to Senator from Barton. I've given it to the utility companies. We've given it to the consumers. They've all had a chance to understand the outline. We built the bill around those outlines, and we're presenting it here today. Some of the key points is that a needs analysis. A few years ago, KCP&L had a need. They put together a 42-page document that by the time that document was completed and presented, the stakeholders signed off on the need for them to build I-10 2 and to raise the rates, as some have seen, 80 to 90%. That's a tremendous increase, but it was done by all stakeholders signing off on it. My bill is just asking that if Ameren or whoever has a needs analysis as such that says we need to take on some of these changes, let's see the needs analysis and we'll go from there. Our bill has a hard cap. Hard cap means that you have the cap for 5 years. At the end of 5 years, you go to the normal rate-making process, but you do not take the deferment for everything that was above the cap and carry it forward, which I believe the bill that we heard last night does allow deferral. It does allow that to carry forward. It's either pay me now or pay me later. This bill will not allow that to take place. Also, if we're going to use PISA, let's make sure it makes sense. Plan service accounting should be to incentivize or cause the utility companies to invest in grid modernization. So our bill outlines and defines what kind of commitment you have to make in for your infrastructure build to qualify for the PISA. We also use language from Senate Bill 1028 on determining the ROE. This is Ameren's language. We felt like that piece made sense, so we added that so that the return on equity is part of this bill. Colleagues, we have an issue we've been dealing with for many years, whether it's water, electric, or gas. I hope this bill before us will take time to evaluate all the components we've been discussing for 6 years and have an opportunity to go forward. I've heard it many times, we're having subject fatigue here. But I guarantee you, I am not going to wear out. I am not going to allow a bill to go forward that incents or creates an environment where one entity makes a large profit on all the other economic engine drivers in our state and hits their bottom line and their P&L and is a detriment to them. It's got to be a balance. So with that, Mr. President, I thank you for my time.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the senator from St. Francois.
Senator from St. Francis, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Buchanan?
Yes, I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Senator, thank you for introducing that legislation. I have three suggestions that I would like to make for you to incorporate in legislation, for the body to incorporate. First, I think that public utilities, which are monopolies and are guaranteed a high rate of return, should not be allowed to make campaign contributions to legislators. They should be absolutely prohibited from making campaign contributions. Your reaction?
I understand what you're saying. We have last year or a couple years ago, we had the State Department, MoDOT, trying to get infrastructure bill passed. We were not able to do it. It was filibustered. Matter of fact, it was filibustered from the senator from Barton, of all people. And they do not have a campaign fund to provide to the legislators out there. But the utility companies have very deep pockets, and they do have a lot of dollar persuasion there, so that concerns me, and I would be happy to entertain and have that conversation. Not having to really think about it, I'll be happy to talk to you about it, though.
Okay, the second suggestion that I have is that utility companies should not be allowed to have more than one or two lobbyists on the payroll per utility company. How many lobbyists? I heard that Ameren has 48 lobbyists. 48.
My understanding is that contracted lobbyist companies, there's 11 contracted lobbyists. Now, there may be two or three lobbyists per lobby firm. I don't know how that builds up. I've heard anywhere from a basic of 11 in this building to 40 overall, but we'll find somebody that can get an actual count. But even think about 11 contracted lobbyists, 11 companies hired. If this is such a good bill, why is it taking this many dollars expended to get it passed down through this system?
Okay, correct. And then thirdly, you know, we keep hearing that Warner Baxter, his income is like $6 to $7 million a year. And I'm not saying that we should put a limit on that. I just want that salary included in the return on investment, our return on whatever, ROE, ROI.
Return on equity. His salary is not calculated in that return on equity.
Just include the salary of the administrators in the ROE. You know, and just put that in there. That way, the ratepayers won't be paying those inflated, god-awfully high salaries. What do you think?
Well, Senator, you make some very valid points, and I look forward to having those discussions with you.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield to inquire from the Senator from Butler?
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, Senator, piqued my interest there. You know, I've talked about executive salary a lot on these utility bills. Just to let you know, as a comparison really quick, the top three executives at Ameren, between them, they make right at $16 million a year.
Well, you know, that's okay. If the shareholders of Ameren think it's so worth it, bury their salaries not in the calculation of the rate, but bury it in the calculation of their return on equity, and then they can pay them whatever they want. Let them pay them $50 million, but that would be the shareholders paying them and not the people, you know.
Well, the comparison I wanted to make, though, is you know, those top three executives have several thousand people, you know, and they have to maintain electric and, you know, good sizable portion of Missouri. But the highway department, MoDOT, they have 34,000 miles of roads to maintain, thousands of employees, and you know how much the top three make runs MoDOT together?
300,000?
No, they make about 460,000. Now,
a reminder, there is no video recording allowed in the Senate chambers. There is no video recording allowed in the galleries or the chamber. Senator, you may...
Well, Senator, the thing is, you know, the utilities, which are monopolies, and they're guaranteed a 9.5% return on their money, guaranteed. How hard is it to run a company that's guaranteed by law a 9.5% return on your money when most people are just making hardly any? You put money in your savings account, you get like, what, 0.25% or something?
Yeah, and how would you like to have a business with no competition, and the more you spend, the more you earn? But anyway, I just wanted to draw that.
You like my idea.
Oh,
just like,
I think it's a good idea.
It would take away, it would totally take away the concerns that we have about these overpaid executives raping the consumers for these high salaries. Just bury it in their ROE, and that'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I just wanted to make sure that when we're comparing what your responsibilities are in running a company like one of these monopoly utility companies like Ameren, top three making about $16 million a year, the top three at MoDOT, who's responsible for safety of our families, our school buses, getting back and forth to work, our economic development, so on and so forth. Our top three over there runs MoDOT, who has thousands of employees, got them spread out all over the state of Missouri. Those top three executives make about $460,000 a year. Now,
pretty big contrast, Senator.
I'm from the country, but there's something wrong with that, in my opinion.
There is. There's something wrong with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
President, could I inquire of the Senator from Buchanan?
Senator from Buchanan, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Barton.
I do.
Senator from Barton, you may proceed.
Thanks, Senator. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just, you know, I know you've been involved in some of the ongoing debates on energy for some time, as well as the Senator from St. Francis and the Senator from Butler. But one of the things that I think is very important to this debate is that we actually use factual information. We're not going to come to a resolution if we don't talk about what actually is versus what is speculated. One of the things that is frequently commented on here is the guaranteed rate of return, which is inaccurate. Publicly regulated utilities do not get a guaranteed rate of return. In fact, I think it's been over a decade since KCP&L has made their authorized rate of return. I don't have the numbers in front of me for the other two utilities in terms of how many years they've made their authorized return, how many years they haven't. What ROE is in the regulated monopoly is an authorized rate of return. They're authorized to make up to that, not above it. They frequently don't make that rate of return.
Do they ever over-earn?
They have on occasion. I can get you the information on over the last 10 or 15 years, the years that they were over versus the years that they were under. So one of the things that we've tried to do here, performance-based rate making and other things, which we were not successful, one of the advantages to that is if there is any over-earning, it goes back to the customer. In the current regulatory model, that does not happen. So if a utility over-earns, that we have no way of returning that money to the customer. We also have no way of making up any money if they have authorized rate of return and they don't make those.
So how would you define over-earning? Is it when they earn more than their authorized rate of return?
Exactly, right.
Okay, so that does happen from time to time.
It has happened. It hasn't happened for KCP&L for years.
Now I've been told, and I don't know if it's true, but I need to be educated. Because if I'm saying something wrong, I absolutely want to correct it.
I understand that. That was the reason that I inquired.
The question is, isn't it true that they could go in for a rate case as often as they want, but they don't do that?
They can't. It takes 11 months to get a rate case, so no more often than that.
Once a year.
Roughly once a year, right.
Okay, but some of them go years without going in for a rate case, correct?
That's correct.
Now, if they were not earning their authorized rate of return, wouldn't they go in for a rate case more often?
Well, they certainly are permitted to. I guess we could look at the annual reports of what they have done, and that would tell us, you know, whether they're doing that. I don't know that they are going in every time they don't authorize it, but we can get that information for you.
Well, from time to time, they're forced to go in because some consumers come together and say, you're over-earning there, and we're going to go in for a rate case, which is expensive.
Right. The Public Service Commission can call for a rate case if they think they're over-earning. The public can call for a rate case if they think they're over-earning. The company can call for a rate case if they think they're under-earning.
Under-earning.
Right.
But so the thing is, if they don't go in for a rate case for several years, would it be a reasonable assumption that they're probably not under-earning?
Well, we can get you those numbers, so we can know exactly. We don't have to assume. We know whether they've over-earned or under-earned.
Okay, so when I say that they have a guaranteed rate of return, that's really wrong. I shouldn't use that language.
Authorized would be the appropriate term.
I should say they have an authorized rate of return of 9.5%.
Right.
And are you aware of any of them that ever, like, lose money?
Say that again, Senator.
That they ever lose money? Do any of them ever say, like, we had a loss?
One of the things about the public utilities is that it's the responsibility of the Public Service Commission to make sure that they don't get on shaky ground financially. So the Public Service Commission has kind of a twofold responsibility there. One is to make sure that they receive what they need in order to continue their business. And then the other is to make sure that they don't spend more than they should in order to maintain the quality of electricity and service that they're required to.
So they kind of have a sort of, would it be fair to say that they try to guarantee that they make a profit?
Say that again, Senator, I'm sorry.
Would it be fair to say that the Public Service Commission is there to sort of guarantee that they make a profit?
That would not be unfair. That's one of the duties of the Public Service Commission.
So they have a guaranteed profit, not necessarily.
They want to be sure that they're, and I say profitable, I don't know that there haven't been years, maybe that they weren't, but the Public Service Commission would take that pretty seriously if a company was losing money that was being relied upon by the Missourians.
So if I were to say utilities have a sort of a guaranteed profit and an authorized rate of return of 9.5%, that would be a fair statement.
Yes.
Thank you for helping me to sharpen my debate.
You bet. Another thing I think needs to be cleared up relative to salaries. You know, one of the things that comes into the Public Service Commission that does become a part of the ROE is the salary that is attributed to the Missouri part of Ameren, which is a little less than half. The actual salary of the president, I think, is about $1,040,000 or something like that. The portion of that comes in on a rate case is about half of that, which goes before the PSC. The PSC has to sign off on that and agree to it. The rest of the compensation package, anything that the Public Service Commission does not agree to, comes right from the shareholders. The stakeholders pay all the rest of the compensation package for the president of Ameren. My guess is that that's true of every utility. I think I inquired of KCP&L last year, and they confirmed that it is. I haven't reaffirmed that this year, but that's kind of where that is. And that's a significant misunderstanding, because we're talking about $5.5 million that we're saying the ratepayers are paying, which they're not. They're not paying that $5.5 million. The shareholders are paying that $5.5 million. and the only thing, or $5 million, the only thing that comes in here is Missouri's share of the $1 million of compensation. So that's also something I think is important to understand. The other thing that was brought up, and I think the senator from St. Francis was trying to clarify this some, in terms of the lobbyists. There are three different categories that you can qualify for as lobbyists. You can qualify for local government lobbying, for state-level lobbying, and then for federal-level lobbying. I don't know how many contract lobbyists KCP&L might have engaged. I think Ameren has four engaged. Might be six. I think they have six contract lobbyists engaged. They also have two lobbyists that are Ameren employees that work in the Capitol pretty much all the time. One of the things that Ameren decided to do years ago, because they will bring down executives to try to answer our questions when we have questions, rather than just rely on the lobbyists, anyone that they allow to come to the Capitol to talk to legislators, they sign them up as lobbyists, pay the fees, do whatever they need to do, because they don't want to get in a situation where they might be compromising the intent. Now, theoretically, if they're simply accompanying a lobbyist, they're probably okay. But they'd rather be safe than sorry, so they've signed all those people up. The other thing is that I expect more than half of the registered lobbyists are registered at the local level, because these are people that might go in and talk to the local city about streetlights. They might talk to them about, you know, some other aspect of local delivery of electricity. So they're not even qualified to come to the Capitol. And so when we start talking about dozens of lobbyists, we really need to go a little deeper into that lobbyist list and count those. And I just think it's important that we use facts rather than speculation.
You know what my concern is? My concern is that you have this special interest monopoly which is coming to the legislature and asking us to change the rules so that they can make more money. I mean, they wouldn't be coming unless they could make more money. Would you agree with that statement?
Well, I don't see why they would if there's not some benefit. And that's why in the hearings that we have, we typically ask the companies to describe both the benefits to consumers and the benefits to the corporation. You won't find, even in the private sector very often, maybe the senator from Butler would disagree, but you won't find there that a business owner typically does things that are going to penalize the business. That just isn't, usually there's some other way to do it if that's the case. If it's a benefit to your customers, then you try to figure out a way that it's also a benefit to you.
Are you privy to the information of how much they actually spend on lobbying here at the Capitol?
I don't have that number, Senator.
Do you think you could get it? That'd be interesting.
Only
other thing that I suggested was a limit on campaign contributions by public utilities.
Right.
Do you think of that?
Well, that's a specific target that would probably be worth talking about, maybe going after and saying this because they are public utilities. I've never thought about it in that realm before. I don't like limiting what somebody can do with their money. But you're talking about a public utility here. That's a little bit different situation. So that's a different discussion. My opposition in the past to contribution limits is that why should the government be able to come to you and tell you what you can and can't do with your money? Yeah, and I don't like the idea that the government can do that.
This is a very unique animal. This is a monopoly that the state has said, you don't have any competitors, and so we have this system that we've developed to protect consumers from basically, you know, being overcharged for the product. You said yourself they have a guaranteed profit and an authorized rate of return. So, I mean, like, they oughtn't to be able to come in and try to influence the judgment of legislators through campaign contributions.
I can tell you this, Senator. If I was an employee of a public utility and that was proposed, I'd sign on immediately. I can't imagine the money I would save in terms of as a public utility by being forced by law not to contribute, because then you couldn't have senators coming to you asking you for money for their campaigns. You couldn't have representatives asking you for money. It's like, wow, this is a major savings to the corporation if they didn't feel like that was an important part of business. Most businesses, I expect if you ask anyone in this building that has a business, they've been asked for political contributions, and some have probably have made them. And so if they were forbidden to make them, that would save them money. And I personally, if I was one of the utilities, I wouldn't have any problem with that.
Well, it would thwart their ability to come to the legislature.
No, it wouldn't. They could be in every office as often as they wanted to be.
I mean, it would weaken their ability.
I don't think it would, Senator.
Well, then why do they spend the money?
Because they feel like they have to, I would imagine.
Well,
you'll have
I think
to ask
they
them.
Feel like it works. That's
you'll have
why
to ask them. Why do we ask them for money?
Well, I don't anymore. I mean, I...
But you are somewhat uncommon in
I'm
that arena. Most of the senators in this building have asked contributors for money. Some have made contributions to political races.
And then you have to ask yourself, if they give you money, are you more likely to be positive about considering the legislation?
Well, that's a question that is universal. The question here we're dealing with is whether a public utility should be forbidden from doing that because they're a public utility. That's worth the discussion, in my opinion. And if I was a public utility, I would love that amendment.
Well, I appreciate your inquiry. I really do.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senate is on the order of business of introduction of bills. Senator from Boone, what purpose do you rise?
President, I'm seeking unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, in our back up in the upper gallery, we have a group from the Missouri Society of Anesthesiologists with us today. They're here from all across Missouri. They're going to be down here at the conclusion of this morning's session to take a picture on the floor, I think, with any other individuals who'd like to be a part of that picture. So I'd encourage the body to make them feel welcome this morning.
Let's please welcome the guests from the Senator from Boone. And if you would please rise and be recognized. Thank you. Introduction of guests. Senator from Lewis, what purpose? I'm sorry, the order of business is introduction of bills. Senator from Lewis, what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to inquire the Senator from Putnam.
Senator from the...
Senator from Andrew. Putnam threw him off, I think.
Senator from Andrew is in the chamber. Senator from Andrew, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Lewis?
I certainly do, Mr. President.
Senator from Lewis, you may proceed.
Good morning, Senator.
Did Putnam throw you off a little bit? I asked to inquire the senator from Putnam.
That helps.
That's a very good county. It used to be one of mine before redistricting.
It's a wonderful county. There's a lot of great counties up in the great northwest part of the state.
And northeast.
Yeah. And northeast and north central. You bet.
Senator, you sat in on a committee hearing yesterday in the Ag Committee and brought up a working animal bill.
We did. Yeah, it was very interesting testimony.
It was. And what brought this about was what we'd seen happen in other states with bans on carriage rides and things like that. And we knew the city of St. Louis was looking at possibly banning the carriage rides.
Yes.
But, you know, here we have the city that's the home of the Anheuser-Busch Clydesdales.
Yeah.
Working animals. Working animals.
You bet.
Senator, I just found out that one of the committees of the St. Louis board just made a vote to ban the carriage operations, the carriage industry in St. Louis. Now, that committee, as I understand, just voted on that. It was a 4-1 vote. And they're going to take it, and actually they said they were going to fast-track it through the St. Louis Board Alderman. I think that is a great disgrace that they're trying to outlaw an industry that has been there for years. And, you know, like I said yesterday in committee, and I know the senator from Dallas County was there too, but as humans, we've utilized the animal throughout history.
Throughout history.
And, you know, the one thing about these fine horses that they have, you've got to treat them right for them to treat you right.
Bet.
And probably no better care taken of those animals that work for us.
That's right.
Because we have to take care of those.
A lot of love for those animals, isn't there?
That's right. A lot of love goes into that. Yep. But I was very disappointed to hear that the committee had voted to ban the carriage rides in St. Louis. But, you know, if I wonder, I know the senator from Cole actually has a stagecoach and a wagon, and I believe he uses them in parades. But, you know, these animals, these work animals, these horses, they love what they want to do. They love to go to work every day.
They are. They were bred for that purpose.
They were bred for that.
Through the years.
You're exactly right. But, Senator, I just want to make you and everybody else aware that since we heard that bill yesterday that would have stopped the bans, and we're not against regulations. We're not trying to protect bad actors. But we've seen this trickle down in other states and in other cities.
But to ban an entire industry.
They're banning that entire industry.
Certainly seems to make your bill very timely.
Well, I wish I could get it through before they actually get their city council vote on that. But anyway, I think it's going to lead to many discussions I think we need to have with somebody from St. Louis. To see what really needs to be rectified.
You know, through the ages, people, you think about the romantic carriage ride through the park, and people having that opportunity, that grace, and that glory of taking that, enjoying the outdoors in a very leisurely fashion, with the animals, you know, doing what they're bred to do, doing their job, and it will be a shame that if that won't be available to the next generations, that they won't have that opportunity to have that kind of experience. It seems like we're losing out on something if that transpires.
And you know, Senator, there's a lot of very picturesque opportunities.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of wedding parties, you know, they'll have the carriage rides down at St. Louis.
Had a good friend of mine just had a carriage business for many years. His father just passed away, and he had a funeral carriage or a funeral a funeral opportunity. What a great honor to his father, who had been very much engaged with him in the carriage business through the years. Very much a tribute to that individual and the animals that they work with.
So. You know, a lot of military and higher-up funerals actually have the horses.
Absolutely.
Pulling those carriages to the cemetery.
Caissons, to some
Caisson,
extent.
Caisson, yeah. Mm-hmm. They have those. So, you know, but to just totally ban the carriage industry without trying to work with them. And actually, it was mentioned yesterday in committee that they had tried to work with the carriage operations. But visiting with the carriage people says, we have offered many times to meet with them and try to work out the differences. But it seems like the city's the one that's not being truthful in what they want to do.
Seems like an unfortunate situation.
I think it is. And like I say, I certainly hope it leads to some discussions with the people from St. Louis, the Board of Aldermen.
You would hope they could work out any difficulties.
By the way, did you know that I drove a team down at the state fair?
I did not know that.
I've got a picture of that.
I believe
the president that's up on the dais actually drove a team also down at the state fair.
Oh, well, there you go.
It was the very first time I'd ever driven a team of horses pulling a wagon. Magnificent, beautiful horses.
Beautiful animals. You bet.
It's just a good thing the senator from Cole wasn't there. He'd have beat everybody, I think. Anyway, it's very disheartening that the city of St. Louis is already working on a ban of the carriage industry, and I hope we do have some conversations on that. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Senate is on the order of business of introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Hearing none. Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, I believe the senator from Newton has some business. This could be the second senator of the day we see attempt to run. Senator from Andrew.
Senator from Newton, what person do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Please refer Senate Concurrent Resolution 38. Senate Concurrent Resolution 39 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolution F.
They will be referred. Senator from Call.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 1400 this day. Oh, wait a minute. Well, Mr. President,
Senator from Call, you still have the floor.
I take that back. The order of business is announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Floor Leader. Just want to make sure everybody knows that your hardworking Senate education meeting will be at 12 o'clock today in SRC 1.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
President, your Appropriations Committee will meet about 15 minutes after recess, and we will continue hearings with Office of Administration and probably have an executive session to vote out a couple of bills we heard this morning. Thank you.
Senator from Andrews, purpose you rise.
Thank you, Mr. President. Announcements.
You may proceed.
Mr. President, the Local Government Elections Committee will meet upon adjournment in the Senate lounge.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President. Small Business and Industry will be meeting in SCR 1 immediately. We'll also have an exec after the hearing.
Thank you, Senator. Announcements. Hearing none. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. That was a test previously, and I'm glad the Senator from Butler and the Senator from St. Genevieve and Andrew and Phelps all were paying attention. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 1400 this day.
Senator from Cole has moved that the Senate stand in recess till 2 p.m. this day. All those in favor of that motion say aye. All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will be in recess till 2 p.m. this day.